Hello, hello everyone. My name is Janine Bozer. I am a Reiki master and an intuitive healer located in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And today I am happy to be sharing this space with Doug Lawrence, a renowned mentor and author. And today we're going to be talking about our love and our passion in the realm of mental health and mental health healing for our clients and for the people that we work with. When it comes to mental health, it's especially been in the forefront throughout the pandemic. I think, and Doug, you'll agree with me on this, that now more than ever, we're starting to notice our emotions. We're starting to notice that we're storing energy. We're starting to notice maybe some trauma responses. Maybe we're not familiar with the word trauma or what that is. And a lot of us, we tend to turn to what we know, which is the Western medicine world. We go to our doctor, maybe they recommend seeing a therapist. Maybe we're on a wait list to see a therapist. Maybe we're on a wait list to see a psychiatrist. I know that's fairly common in the city. And we can feel kind of hopeless at times that our mental health isn't going to get support. We don't know where to go. We don't know who's out there that can help us. And I think both Doug and I have found that in our respective paths with mentoring and with Reiki, we can really fulfill a need for mental health healing around the world that's kind of missing right now, or really over needed. We're really stressing our usual regular systems when it comes to our mental and physical health during the pandemic. So where do we turn? What do we do? Mentoring and Reiki, us healers are out here ready to help people. And that's something that Doug and I want to share today, a little bit about our respective experiences with mental illness and mental health, how we got to where we are in our journeys, and why it's important for us to help others, and a little bit about how we do that. So I'm going to turn the floor over to Doug and let him speak about what got him here and his journey with mentoring and how that can help others with their mental health. So welcome, Doug. Thanks for being here today.
And thank you for this opportunity. So for me, my journey actually starts back a number of years when I was a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and obviously experienced all kinds of different sorts of trauma and stuff with, you know, having served for 25 years with the police force and not really understanding why I was behaving the way I was. And it was not a very nice person that I had become because of what I found was the trauma impacted me in such a way that I turned to look to see what support structure that was there to help me get through some of this stuff, only to find out that in my mind, I thought the bottle of Scotch whiskey was the best possible choice that I could take. And I would come home from dealing with a particular traumatic event and go immediately to the cupboard where I had my liquor stored, and I'd grab a bottle of Scotch and sit down and drink that. And then, you know, you would eventually come to a stage where you probably passed out or just went to sleep, and you'd wake up in the morning and nothing had really changed. Mm-hmm. And so the whole coping mechanism of turning to alcohol and for some people drugs just didn't cut it. And what I really truly needed at that stage was I needed somebody that would listen and hear how I was feeling and what I had gone through. Who I needed somebody who was non-judgmental, that they wouldn't say, you know, suck it up, buttercup, and just, you know, get on with it.
Yeah.
Because what was also starting to take place was my behavior was impacting my family and my circle of friends, where I was not drawing them in as part of my support. I was pushing them away. Yeah. Because nobody wanted to be around me whatsoever. And it was actually, I didn't, you know, now that I think about it, I didn't actually acknowledge that there was something wrong. And I didn't understand what it was that was wrong until I started to do some research on my book that I published back in January, You Are Not Alone. And that's a book that speaks to mentoring and mental health and how mentoring can be part of that support structure. That's exactly what I needed all those years ago, back when I was still in the police force, was I needed that support structure, which was non-existent. And I'm kind of saddened that even today that it's missing in a lot of different situations where
absolutely
there's the stigmatism. I can't reach out because that's a sign of weakness.
Yeah. It's a beautiful full circle in a lot of ways that you've had those experiences at a younger age. And I work with a lot of clients in, you know, 65 or 55. And that there's coming to that age group of my working life might not be the same anymore. We're getting semi-retired, working towards retirement, but the emotions are still there. Why do I still have all of this backlog that I need to deal with? And a lot of people, regardless of age, even my age, we're coming to this conclusion that, oh, it's been trauma. That's what that word is. So that sounds super familiar to me with my clients too, that they're coming to understand that, oh, what I've went through was actually trauma response, which at its most basic element and definition is a lasting emotional response to a distressing or disturbing event. And for some of us, like yourself included, who have been through repetitive stressors, that's complex or cumulative PTSD, which we haven't had language around until just a few years ago. CPTSD isn't even in the DSM-5 yet, but PTSD is. But typically we think of police officers or first responders. And that's often, yeah, what people turn to in those moments that we don't have anything is alcohol or drugs or quitting jobs, or, you know, there's so many things that the life becomes very chaotic. So that sounds like a kind of a beautiful research process that brought you to this point of, wow, I think this is what trauma is in my body and how it feels. Yeah.
And what's interesting is, you know, we don't understand or appreciate the magnitude of what we're talking about, because, you know, it's, you take a look at all of the trauma that people have had to go through because of COVID, for example, you know, the number of deaths that have been attributed to COVID. And then I think when I think of that, the number of deaths, then right away, I think of family members who may not have been given the opportunity for closure when one of their loved ones passed away, and they're now trying to deal with that. And, you know, they go through just horrific experiences of having to deal with bereavement and, you know, I think of my own personal case where, you know, my wife passed away from cancer in February of 2021. And, you know, we weren't able to have a celebration of her life until sometime in August. You know, there was that period of time that went by. So how do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? And you know, you can't help but see that would just gnaw away at your whole mental health piece. And, you know, then that's just here, you know, in our local community. Think of it from a global perspective. Mm-hmm. And the number of deaths that we see that take place on an annual basis, and how that, like, it's massive the impact that has.
Yeah, it is. And thank you for sharing so vulnerably today. That's such a tough thing to go through when we don't have the regular support systems. Oh. Add on top of the bereavement and the grief of that passing, and on top of that, now being away from our support structures, being unable to receive hugs, or, you know, people being shy of bringing over food or coming over for a visit. Should we mask? Are we vaccinated? How does this work? Are we allowed with restrictions? Are we going to get a fine for trying to help? Like, there were so many things that added on top. So it extends that process of the emotional integration, the emotional healing that happens over time. It kind of extends that healing phase. And I think a lot of people over the next 5 to 10 years, it's my belief that we'll be heavily diagnosing PTSD finally at long last, because PTSD gets misdiagnosed as a lot of things too. I think when it comes to bipolar disorder, or I know myself, it started as depression and anxiety. And that's what I called it until just the last couple of years. But I didn't realize, and I'll share a bit in a little bit about my own experiences when I was a kid, I didn't realize that would constitute as PTSD. And no one looked at a child and said, you can have PTSD. That's what this is. So I went many years, and now am in just about my 30s and being diagnosed with some of these things and trying to find treatment. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are coming to that same conclusion, because it's not just depression. It's not just anxiety. Why are we having these big emotional responses, even though we're seeking therapy, even though we're trying medications? Or as the pandemic starts to ease and the restrictions lift, when we're getting back to our support systems, why do we still feel fear of going to the grocery store? Why do we still feel a fear of giving our friends and family hugs? Or why are we still afraid of hospital visits? There might be that lingering emotional state, which is often how people come to that conclusion of, I think something's wrong or something's different about me and I'm not sure what it is. So thank you for sharing that experience. It definitely resonates with, I think, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that I've found, excuse me, and it still lingers, is the whole aspect of groups of people and mm-hmm. how you tried as much as you could to shy away from being in the presence of a larger group of individuals. And mm-hmm. I think of it, you know, Easter time and Christmas and stuff like that, where, you know, you feel compelled to be part of the bigger group, because it's, you know, it's time we need to celebrate Christmas and all of that stuff. But it was a feeling or a sense of being uncomfortable in those sessions, because you either wanted to kind of sit off in a corner by yourself and not socially interact with people, or you just sometimes avoided them in the first place. And I found that for me, and it's strange, because normally I'm somewhat of a social butterfly and I enjoy the relationships and all that, but I did find it somewhat difficult, you know, when somebody would stand up and say, well, I think it's time we went home. I was out the door and gone before, you know, anybody could even say good night. So you know, look at what it's done to change our behavior mm-hmm. in order for us to try to protect that mental health persona that we've come to know.
I completely agree. I know for myself, over Christmas times, I'll share a little bit about my story as well. I'm immune compromised, and that's always been tough. Now I go home for Christmas, I still want to wear a mask with my family, and I sometimes get teased because it's like, well, Janine, it's fine. But a lot of my PTSD stems from hospital when I was 13. A lot of it goes back to alcoholism in my house as well. I think it started to build as I was school age. But by the time I was 13, I ended up developing severe ulcerative colitis, pan ulcerative colitis, which means it's everywhere in the large intestine. And within a month, I nearly died. It was so fast, so swift. I lost 28 pounds. I was in hospital, just basically fading away. And it got to the point where my colon was going to burst. So at 13, I was going through all of these very invasive, intense medical experiences to try to save my life. And I ended up having my colon completely removed through a 3-step surgery process. But when I got done those surgeries, I was told, you're good. You've survived. You're healthy again. You're going to be on the mend. Go home and live your life. And there was celebration. You're fine. You're safe. You're good. Meanwhile, I was reteaching my body how to sit up. I was reteaching myself to walk because I had been bedridden for 6 weeks. And I had just gone through these really invasive surgeries that really deconstructed my core. We use our core for everything. We don't realize how much we use it to move our entire body until we lose it for a while. So at a very young age, I had gone through all these experiences, and I got back into school because I had missed my entire grade 9 year of school. I ended up having some tutors and keeping up with my core subjects, but I missed it. And I got back to the teenagers that I was supposed to be peers to, and they were complaining about their hair and how terrible the hair dye had set and the clothes they had and how their parents sucked because they didn't have Billabong clothing. And I couldn't eat most of the food in my house because I was in such severe pain trying to refigure out what foods were safe for my body. I was so separate all of a sudden from my peer group. So they wanted to drink and to party and to, you know, experiment and have fun. And I was so resistant even then to being in groups, to someone accidentally slipping something in my drink, to I was so on edge. I did not want to end back up in that hospital bed. So I avoided everything for about until I was about 25, because I didn't know how to handle being around alcohol or around peers that didn't seem to understand what I had been through. So now, as I'm a little bit older, closer to my 30s, it's a little bit easier. I'm finding some people that are kind of in my, we're maturity wise, kind of getting to some similar levels again, or people, I'm meeting people in that trauma group too, who have also been through stuff. But I didn't recognize what trauma was. I just knew I was afraid and that I didn't want to do things, and people made fun of me because it was different, because I wasn't following. I was kind of the outsider. And then in the pandemic now too, those similar fears are coming back of, I don't want to end up back in hospital. I don't want to end up back in hospital. That thought has crossed my mind just about every day for the last 2 years, even while we're having these debates with friends and family, or should I go home for Christmas or should I not? Should I sit at the end of the table? Have I washed my hands? There's been a lot of fear that's come up and a lot of fear responses that have been extra difficult because of the past experiences I've had. So it's been absolutely impactful for me, noticing like I need to take care of myself in a much deeper, more methodical level every day to make sure that I'm not getting into these fear responses too much. Yeah.
It's interesting because every time you mentioned about not wanting to have to go back to the hospital, mm-hmm. and that it triggered a memory for me of, and I went through this just this past weekend, where my granddaughter was playing ringette at the cooperators, and I went to watch her. And every time to get there to park in the parking lot, I had to go by the hospital where my wife had basically lived for the latter part of her life, and she passed away in the hospital. So every time I was driving by, all these memories. Yeah. All these memories kept, you know, coming back, even to the point where I was able to pinpoint the window that I stood by with my remote to start my car so I could warm it up and drive home to get a couple hours sleep so I could come back and be with her. And it was, you know, I had times, by the time I got to the parking lot, I was literally in tears because it just brought back all those memories.
Yeah. Absolutely. And thank you. It's something I go through at hospitals as well, is that physical memory. For the first few years, actually, after hospitals, I couldn't go back for appointments without physically shaking like a leaf head to toe. And it took me a few years to get through that sensation. The body just knew this is where this happened. And that's what the nervous system at its most fundamental is for. It's to keep us away from the pain of the past. But the thing about the nervous system is the double-edged sword. It doesn't know time. Mm-hmm. So that's part one of the sword, is it doesn't know time. So that's why we often have these childlike flashbacks when we're thinking back to childhood, or like yourself, you know, it's been a year, but we can still feel that as if it's happening today in that moment, as if we're going to go to the hospital to visit Deborah and to go see her. And we're in that space again, even though our body's like, this doesn't make sense. Our rational, logical brain can say, I know this isn't right, but the physical body is reacting as if that old situation's happening. And the double-edged sword of the nervous system is, because it doesn't know time, we can heal a lot of past traumas. And that's something that I think until about the mid-90s, we really thought the brain was pretty stuck in its ways past 25. It wasn't very capable of change. But now we know quite a bit different, that the brain is quite elastic. We can rewrite neural pathways. We can heal a lot. So people always say, you know, is PTSD curable then? Like, can we treat this? Or I've argued with a few therapists about this. So when it comes to, is PTSD curable? I always say, I'll never not have the memories. I'll never not have lived through hospital. I'll never not have gone through my parents' divorce, or my dad's alcoholism, or my own struggles through my mid-20s with bullying and like college years. But I will have a different relationship with them. And I can rewrite that to the point where I'm no longer living in fear of those memories. We can help the brain break down those old neural structures so that we create a new path through meditation, or like mentoring relationships, or Reiki, or these practices. And I'd love to speak a little more about that as we go through our chat here, about what we can do and what have you found has worked for you? Has mentoring really made an impact for you being able to share your experiences as well as help clients with their own mental health? How do you find that mentoring fits into this?
Well, it does, because some of the key elements of mentoring, which is the act of listening, so listening and hearing and being non-judgmental, those are all things that people that I'm working with today in a mental health capacity, those are all things that they're looking for, because everybody is so quick to, you know, to jump to, well, you know, like I mentioned before, just suck it up, buttercup, and deal with it and stuff, instead of showing that compassion, that understanding to some extent. People just aren't doing that. So the mentoring does fill that gap. And that's why, you know, all the research and that I've done, it shows me and tells me that mentoring is a good fit for the support structure. And it was actually, you know, I talked to a lot of people that have said, you know, you need, number one, you need to write a book about that, but you also, you know, you also need to get engaged as much as you possibly can in being part of that support structure so that, you know, we can start to make a difference.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I find it's very similar with Reiki. Reiki is a Japanese energy healing technique, and it's something that absolutely started my mental health healing when I found it a few years ago. My naturopath had suggested, after we tried dietary changes and lifestyle changes and reducing stress, and I was still having these big emotional outbursts and these big responses from the body. And she said, you know, have you ever talk to someone, you know, outside of therapy, or have you done energy healing? And I said, I don't know, give it a try. we'll try anything at this point, which I think is where a lot of us come to that searching for alternative paths like mentoring or Reiki or acupuncture or naturopathy. We come to that point where we're frustrated with where we are and we know we can move forward, but we're just not sure how. There is that innate sense that life could be different or better or easier. But how do I get there, and who's going to be there to support me? And that's where I found Reiki really helped me, was learning about my body, learning about the messages my body was sending me through pains or illnesses or the little twinges or intuitive feelings we get throughout the day. Learning to tune within really helps. And I've been in therapy for so many years myself that I found when I started to work with clients, I was attracting people who had also been through traumas and relationship traumas or financial stuff. And I thought, I'm attracting people that need me because I have some experience with this stuff. I'm pretty young and I've got a lot of experience with trauma. And it seems like I could maybe offer a few suggestions because I've been on this path for quite a while. And it was a really beautiful segue into really finding out kind of what my niche is, or the market that I get to serve, is trauma healing and Reiki. We can do both. So often that talk therapy, I kind of just use Sigmund Freud's term of talk therapy. I'm not a therapist, but what I can do is help intuitively guide our conversation to say, your shoulders feel really tight today. How is this? What is going on with your heart chakra? Where are we carrying some grief? You know, what responsibilities are we wanting to let go of? And then letting the person talk through it really brings that energy forward, just in a way that the traditional Reiki is quite quiet, a little bit of hands-on sharing energy. It's more like a meditative experience, but I find Reiki can also be really used in conjunction with talking. It can be really used to help energy flow, to create that safe, non-judgmental environment. So their body and their nervous system of the client knows, hey, this is a person who understands. We start to co-regulate our nervous systems together. And that opens up a lot of vulnerability, knowing that you have a space to share things. So I love talking during Reiki sessions. I do all of my sessions online with clients. It just gets us out of our head and our mind a little bit, but we're able to use our words and just get it out, to talk, to work through some of it with someone who says, that would be really hard, or that would be difficult. I understand why you might be struggling with that. Just that wording alone versus suck it up, buttercup, or well, that's dumb, you should just stop talking about it. There's such different feelings. And when someone's able to meet us where we are to say, you're okay, even if it doesn't feel okay today, I understand where you might be coming from. That sounds like it would be really difficult. that moment of validation often lets the whole body relax. We can feel it in our shoulders, in our chest. We take that deep breath going, oh, someone gets it. It's not just in my head. It's not just me. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to create that non-judgmental environment, which I love that we have that in common with mentoring and with energy healing. Yeah.
And the one thing that I'm finding is that I'm part of a bereavement group of four people. And what's really interesting is that what it's done for each one of us that are part of that group is the realization that somebody else is going through the same.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, the same grief, maybe a bit different, but at the end of the day, you know, we all can relate to what each other is feeling. And that's been really, really beneficial. Like I've watched how the group has nurtured and grown over the time that the four of us have been together. And we've actually gone from, you know, never knowing who each other was, and now we're best of friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that vulnerability and authenticity between people. And that's something I find from my own experience is often missing in Western medicine and healthcare. And I understand for privacy reasons and, you know, not wanting to get too close with clients and things, I can see where sometimes the barriers are put up, but especially when we're talking about mental health, it would be so nice to see more people saying, I understand that feeling. Even if it's not to share an experience, or I don't expect my doctor to say, oh, I also suffer from depression and I had to take my meds this morning. Like that might be a little too much information to share with all of your clients throughout the day. But for a therapist or someone to just say, I get that. I feel like I've been there before. I don't know if I've ever heard a therapist say that to me. And that's so impactful because it feels like there's such separation in that relationship then. And I understand for professional reasons, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, guidelines set up to kind of keep those separations, keep the barriers up a little bit, but trauma healing is dependent on that relationship. We have to trust the person we're speaking with. We have to rebuild our nervous system's capability to feel safety. And that starts with relationships as well. We can do so much of the work within, but we also need someone on the other side to mirror that acceptance and love and compassion back so that we're not the only ones giving it to ourselves. That's where friendships or groups or finding that right practitioner come in. It's important, especially when it comes to mental health and trauma, and mental health trauma can also include symptoms of depression and anxiety, or, you know, bipolar. Like trauma is a very big conversation when it comes to mental health. So if you're not relating specifically with the word trauma, it's definitely any kind of mental illness. I think really depends on that relational exchange of just love and compassion.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Yeah. You know, when I think of where I was and where I am today, you know, I, the best way for me to describe it is I opened the door to my closet and stepped out and extended a hand and said, I need help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very fortunate in that there were people that were standing there and saying, we're here to help you. Yeah. We'll take your hand and let's go on this healing journey together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's impactful. It really is. And I think I'd love to give us each a moment to share some ways that if people do need some support, what are some ways that they can get in touch with us? And then I'd also love to share a couple little exercises for soothing our nervous systems, because this has been a big conversation today. Some of us might even be feeling triggered or tense and tight just listening to our stories, because we're co-regulating, we're feeling each other's system and our energy. So I'd love to share an exercise at the end of our call too. But what are some ways that people can get in touch with you? And I'll share some as well. If they're needing support and recognizing that, yeah, I'd like to extend that hand to ask for some help.
So, excuse me, there's probably three main ways. So I have my website, the www.talentc.ca. Mm-hmm. There's a contact page on there that you can, you know, click on the button, fill in the blanks, and it gets to me. There's also the link through LinkedIn. I do lots of work on LinkedIn. So, you know, go to LinkedIn, do a search on my name, Doug Lawrence, and it should bring it up. And you can also message me through LinkedIn if you so wish. But just to make your life a whole lot easier, I have no difficulties with people reaching out via email, and my email address is doug.lawrence, that's L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E, at talent C. So the word talent with the letter C on the end, .ca. And if you send me a message and we can set up a time to do a Zoom chat or, you know, whatever works for you, but you don't need to, I never leave anyone on the island by themselves. That's probably my best mantra is, you know, just reach out and we'll figure something out.
Yeah. Awesome. And I'll share those links as well in the descriptions or the chat so that people have easy access to both of our links. And that's exactly, don't feel shy about reaching out to Doug. That's exactly what I did. I first met Doug quite a few years ago now, when I was in my second year of college at SIAST. He came to speak to our class and I kept his business card for 2 years and I found it in a drawer one day and I said, I think I need to message this guy. And I did. And we have been in contact ever since. And yeah. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure to get to know Doug over the years. Don't ever feel shy. He is absolutely an amazing person to email. And same for me. I love emails. I love getting to reach out to people just to say hello. If you need a space to vent, if you need a space just to say, I'm not really sure what I'm doing in life, I get it. My best email address to reach me at is intuitionawakening@outlook.com. intuitionawakening@outlook.com. That's my company name, is Intuition Awakening. My website is intuitionawakening.com. I have 30-minute sessions available all the way up to 6-month programs together. We specialize in mental health healing, physical pain healing, trauma healing, because it's an experience that I've lived through and I'm daily working on myself. So I'm really excited to connect for a chat if someone needs some support. And I also teach free classes on Insight Timer. If there's any financial difficulties or you want to get to know me and my approach a little bit more too, Insight Timer is a free meditation app. And if you find me at Intuition Awakening, my teacher page, I'll link as well. And I teach classes several times a month, whether it's on trauma or doing a rapid Reiki healing. So you get to experience a little bit of Reiki healing, see what it's about. Metaphysical meanings of pain is another passion of mine. So I teach some classes on that. So feel free to keep in contact with both Doug and myself. We definitely are here to support. And that's part of why we wanted to have this conversation today, was to really let people know that there is help out there during the pandemic. Even if you're feeling like you're running into walls or barriers, there's kind of this alternative side to mentoring or just informal relationships or a Reiki healer. There's a lot of people out there looking to support you because we've lived it ourselves and we can share some of our experience and knowledge with it too. Yeah. And I'd love to share just a couple quick little exercises that are some of my favorites when it comes to nervous system healing. So today we've talked a lot about our mental health and our nervous system. So again, the nervous system's job is to keep us away from the pain of the past. It's our body's fight or flight, freeze, fawn, dissociate, numb. All of those responses come from our nervous system. So for noticing, I feel a little activated right now. I'm feeling a little on edge. One of the easiest things to do is drink some water. Water is always a great way to kind of reset the body, help us remember that we need nourishment, kind of refresh ourselves. But one of my favorite ways to soothe the nervous system in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to take your right palm. I'm going to place it in your left armpit, a little bit of pressure. So we want to feel a bit of a deep touch. You can bring this arm back down. And we're going to hold this for 1 to 2 minutes. So again, it just looks like hand in the armpit, a little bit of pressure in the armpit. You can even place your left hand on the back of your right palm, give your arm a bit of a rub. This is really soothing. And we can hold this for 1 to 2 minutes. What it's doing is it's working with the vagus nerve, the vagal nerve down the side of our body. And it's incredibly soothing. It's kind of stimulating deep touch. It's reminding us of hugs or embraces or a weighted blanket. So it's a really nice little exercise. And there's so many little somatic tips like this that can help us in those moments of distress, that can help us take a moment to calm down, to help the nervous system shut down, get back into our parasympathetic or our resting and healing mode. so that our logical brain comes back online and we can start to think things through. When we're in a big response, when our emotions are really active and our nervous system's heightened, we often lose this logical processing center for a bit. Our body's so focused on muscles, oxygen, running, figuring this out. We don't need to think through this right now to see, is this right or is it wrong? We just need to escape or fight or freeze. We need to sort the situation out first, and then we can think it through later. So that's often why sometimes with PTSD, we feel a little embarrassed about our reactions later, because we're like, that didn't make any sense. But it takes time for the body's nervous system to say, oh, there's no threat. The house isn't on fire. There's no bears. We're good. I'm going to go to bed now. And then all those thoughts can come back, especially before bed. We're like, oh my God, what did I do today? So this is a nice little way to interrupt that nervous system response. We're starting to retrain and say, no, no, body, we don't need this. Remember, we're going to try things a different way. Awareness is step one, noticing when our body's in arousal, in that like nervous system state. And then change is step two. We get to decide, I don't think I need this today. I'm going to try these exercises, trying to soothe myself. And then what can I do instead? That's where we start to have integration or processing. And then we get to the point of automation. After a while, our body's like, ah, wait, I didn't need that response last time or the last 100 times. Maybe there is a different way of doing things. And we start to kind of deconstruct our old neural pathways and build new ones. So just a little lesson about the nervous system. So give that a try today if you're feeling kind of on edge. Drink lots of water. And thank you so much for joining us, Doug. Do you have any final words before we go?
No, I thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation.
Yeah, no, you're so welcome. I'm so thankful that we got to do this. I know we've been planning it for a couple weeks now, so I'm excited that we got her in the books.
Got her done.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. As always, people, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for subscribing to our channels or wherever you're seeing this video. Feel free to share it with friends or family, and feel free to get in touch with Doug or I if you or someone you know needs some support. So we're sending you much, much love. Have a great day.